Good morning. The time is 9:01. I give a few moments for everybody to join in case anybody had issues calling in, like myself this morning. We should get started and call the meeting to order. The first thing that I need to do this morning is to read a notice, and then we will take roll call. So for the public record, in accordance with Utah Code 52-4-2074, the Chair of the Title and Escrow Commission, I, Chase Phillips, have determined that holding a meeting at an anchor location presents a substantial risk to the health and safety of those who may be present at the anchor location due to the current COVID-19 pandemic. Pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-2075, this determination is valid for 30 days from the date of this determination, dated the third day of November 2020. So, because of the COVID pandemic, we continue to meet over the phone. This morning, I decided I think I'll try and take roll call old school, a little bit like an old, classroom. I'm going to call out your name and let me know if you're here, as opposed to everybody. I know we're, sometimes it's a little awkward when we all try and announce our presence at once. So we'll try this today. So Nancy Franson.
I am here.
Thank you. Randy Smart.
Here.
Darla Milovich. Allison McCoy. Terry Babilis.
Here.
And then before I read all the names of the staff, is there anyone we know for certain is not in the meeting? Not covering for anyone? Okay.
This is Eddie Vasquez. I'm also at the AG's office with Perry. I just wanted to check in.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks.
Okay, do we have on the line with us Angie Northrup?
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us today. Randy Overstreet.
Here, yeah, I'm here.
Michael Covington.
Here.
Reed Stringham.
Here.
Danny Schoenfeld.
Yes, I'm here.
Steve Gooch.
I'm here.
Tracy Sossmeyer.
I'm here.
Adam Martin.
Hi, this is Allison.
Okay. Thank you for joining, Allison. Okay. Anyone else from the department who's joining today that was not on the agenda? Okay. Well, I'll ask one more time. Has Darla joined us yet? And if not, then we'll ask the members of the public. I don't have your name to read off the agenda, so members of the public, please announce yourselves for the meeting.
Carol Yamamoto.
Frank Medina.
Nathan Sprague.
Joseph McPhee.
Bob Rice.
Okay. Thank you all. I appreciate everyone joining the call and being with us this morning. We are going to move on to adopting the minutes of the previous meeting. Did anyone on the commission have any items they have noted that need to be corrected or or anything that, that they believe has been omitted from the minutes?
It looks fine to me, Chase. I just wanted to thank Steve Gooch for going back and correcting that in the minutes. Thank you, Steve. The part about the what Randy Overstreet said and that you went back and listened to the recording. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Other than that, Chase, I motion to approve.
I heard Allison's voice that. First.
Okay.
So sorry, it was a motion approved by Allison, and Nancy seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes. Okay, and we will now move forward to the concurrence reports from the department with Reed Stringham. We'll review the licensing report first. Reed, the time is yours.
Thank you, Chase. Everybody should have copies of license reports for August, September, and October. We're doing it for 3 months because there was a little bit of a problem last time getting the correct reports in. So anyway, you've got 3 months of those to review. I've reviewed them and didn't see anything that raised any questions in my mind, but I'll leave it up to the commission to ask any questions of Randy, who is here.
I didn't necessarily have any questions, but now I can't find it. But when I was looking earlier, I believe that there were two people who had more than 40 years in the industry, and I believe it was Dwayne Phillips and Paul. Paul Newton. So I always think that that's awesome when we have people who stay in the industry for a long time, and I don't know whether it gives us all hope or scares us all who that you're stuck for that long. But I always think that it's awesome to acknowledge those people who stayed in the industry for that long. So kudos to Paul and to Dwayne.
I agree, Allison, that I saw that as well. And they were two good men that retired in the last year. So maybe that's, there's hope of retirement too, right?
Oh, good. Good, there's hope of retirement. Oh, good. Okay, that's good to know too.
but with that, Reed, I Chase, I will motion to concur with the licensing.
Okay, do we have someone to second?
I'll second it.
Okay, motion by Nancy and seconded by Randy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion passes. Thank you all. And now the continuing education report.
Yeah, every quarter we've got the continuing education report. We've got good fortune of having Michael with us, and I think it's fairly self-explanatory, but I'll turn it over to her and see if she has anything specific she wants to point out about it.
Not really, just that COVID, irregardless of COVID, courses continue to happen, and good to see. Webinars are taking off like crazy, and so good to see all these courses that are coming through.
Well, and does anybody have any other comments or questions for Michael? And I would say I continue to be excited to see how many webinar courses are created, and especially how many talking about fraud. I think that really helps towards the initiative of this commission, and I'm very appreciative of the industry in general being so proactive in that endeavor and trying to educate the public. I also want to say I appreciate the ALTA in their ongoing efforts to provide CE for the industry, for the classes that they're getting approved and offering to those out there working in the trenches who need to stay up to date and nice to keep people keep professionals informed so they can continue to help the public. So if there's no other questions, I'll ask for a motion.
This is Allison. I'll make a motion to concur with the CE report.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion from Allison, seconded by Nancy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion passes. Thank you all. We will move on to the next agenda item, the board duties and responsibilities. I believe this is a training or a review with Perry, or possibly Eddie. I'll pass it over to you.
Chase, we don't have anything this month to report on. Thank you so much.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I think I misread the way that was on the agenda this morning. So thank you. I appreciate it.
I think it's always on.
It is. And I misread that as thinking it was a specific for this month. Okay. An update on the 2020 goals. The ULTA report from Nancy. We'll turn the time over to you, Nancy.
Thank you, Chase. I did not attend the ULTA executive board meeting last month. I had a required meeting with my own company, but I did provide a statement from the Title and Escrow Commission that was a short synopsis of our last meeting, and also because I had received the names of the four ABA companies from Director Johnny Stewart, I also provided those to them as well, and along with that, Commissioner Kaiser was retiring. So I did not attend in person, but gave them an update. That's it.
Okay. And Nancy, I guess one thing I was curious about, and I don't know if this is something we can do where I didn't see any of that. Maybe this, so the list of the four companies, I didn't see that attached to the agenda or sent out in the packet. Is that something that if that's not in the public packet, can we present that, or can we?
Absolutely, I will forward. I can forward that to Steve Gooch.
Okay, so then when I get it, do you want me to send it out to the email list to you, the TEC and the interested industry parties?
Well, I don't know if it's public information, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'll add it to the packet and I'll put it on the website. But if you want me to send it out to everybody, I can do that as well. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know if it needs to be sent out to everybody. I didn't know if where it wasn't in the packet, if it was something that's okay to talk about or bring up or share. I mean, that's something where I guess my inexperience here, I'm not entirely sure what's allowed, what isn't.
I think where it's been something that we've been regularly talking about, if we have that information, I think it's good to share, especially where we've all been unclear on who is and who isn't. I don't think it hurts to share, and especially if it is public, I don't think it hurts to share it.
Okay, that'd be really helpful then, Nancy, if you would.
It is on its way.
Thanks. Well, okay, so that's something I think I'll try to review and dive in a little more myself before our next meeting, but I think I'm still wrapping my head around maybe the direction that I would want to see us try and help push with what we ask, eventually end up asking for with how that information is, you know, easily found by the public. So I appreciate getting to know where that's at now and who those companies are now, so we can see what they're doing proactively. It may give us a good insight as to what others, you know, a good foundation for others to follow. Thank you, Nancy. I appreciate it. We'll move on to the Real Estate Commission report with Darla. Oh, sorry, Darla. Was Darla able to join us yet? Okay, and if she's absent this morning, then I think that this will be an item we'll need to skip for today. And so we'll move on to the new business, which I think we were just partially discussing, but is gathering and publishing ABA information with Reed. Reed, if I remember correctly, this is an agenda item that I think is going to continue to show up for a while until we have a suggestion or a resolution. And I believe the last time we talked about it, we had debated the possibilities of this being a legislative fix to require that this information be made public. Is there anything that you want to add to or update us on since on this issue from our last meeting?
Yeah, thank you, Chase. As you know, the department's received a lot of requests ever since this affiliated business arrangements were put in place. We've received a lot of requests that we use the department's information gathering authority to identify those affiliated businesses. And so we've looked at the law pretty closely and decided that we won't be collecting that information. And that's primarily, well, it's solely because we don't think we have legal authority to do that. The affiliated business statutes make it pretty clear that they are enforced by the Division of Real Estate. The legislature kept the department completely out of that. If the legislature had intended the department to get involved, it could have said so, but it didn't. So what we have really is a situation where the department has no legal authority to gather information about affiliated business, really no regulatory reason to do that because we don't regulate them. And it would be contrary, we think, to legislative intent for the department to even step into that arena. Now, I realize that it's important for many of you who are on this call to have that information, but unfortunately, the department isn't the agency that has the legal authority to do that. It's really the Division of Real Estate. So that's the announcement that I wanted to let everybody know about.
So, okay. We appreciate the department reviewing your scope of authority and looking to potentially help resolve this issue and enlighten the public and keep them informed. We know that that was a hot button issue in when the laws changed, and so perhaps the commission will need to look to the ULTA lobby. Maybe there's not much more that we could or should pursue, but maybe it will need to be a public endeavor to lobby with the real estate division to
find a way to bring that public information out, make it out open and transparent.
That makes sense to me.
Nancy, Allison, any thoughts or comments, questions for Reed on that? Anyone else for the commission?
I don't have any.
I remember the last meeting, I thought it was Commissioner Kaiser, but I could be wrong, saying possibly something could be done legislatively, but I agree it would probably need to be the ULTA or a lobbyist rather than Title and Escrow Commission to tweak or fine-tune an area that does say someone at least, I think it should at least say that someone is gathering that information. Whoever that may be, that information is being gathered and can be disseminated. So I will bring that up. I will be on the ULTA call today at noon, and I will bring that up with them.
Reed, I suppose I do have one question.
Yeah.
Would it take a legislative change to give, it would take a legislative change to give the department the authority to begin to collect and maintain that information for the public? Is that, am I following you correctly? I mean, that's the issue, is that as it stands now, you don't have the legal authority. So if that were to change, I mean, if there were something specific in the code that would allow that, or with the way that the way that you understood the laws to currently be written, will that only be able to happen if the Department of Insurance were to end up being the authoritative body behind enforcing these ABA rules and compliance? I mean, meaning, is it narrow? Would a legislative change need to be narrow in scope of just saying yes, you can report on this specific issue, or would it need to be much larger? Meaning, the department, we need to take over the entire authority of the ABA reporting.
I could just speak to the legal authority portion. I don't know. I don't know if it would be wise policy to have it split between two agencies regulating one part of an industry. But aside from that, it would just be a fairly narrow fix. I mean, you could put it in a sense that I guess it says something like, the department has authority to identify those affiliated businesses and publish a list.
Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, if that was there, then the department would comply with that.
I appreciate your comment on that. I do realize that I do realize how broad of a question that is. And I think it's interesting that you say it may not be wise to have two different agencies handling the oversight of an industry, and truthfully, it feels like that's what just happened, anyways. But that's good information for us to consider, and perhaps, Nancy, that's useful information to take back to or to report back to the ULTA or those who may wish to try and pursue legislative change.
I agree, Chase. I do, Reed, I do have another question. Is that okay, Chase?
Yes.
So help me understand how one of the issues we've had recently with ABAs is when they are kind of I say sub-company lightly, but they're under the umbrella of another title company. And we've had issues lately where they've been sharing space. And so the Department of Insurance has gotten involved and has let them know they can't share space with their parent title company. Again, I may not be using the right words there. So in that instance, the Department of Insurance is getting involved with the ABAs. I guess I'm not sure how I understand what areas you are getting involved to make sure ABAs are not doing something they shouldn't, and what areas you're not. And maybe that's not something that can be explained away today, but I guess I am not clear where the Department of Insurance draws the line as to what they do get involved with and what they don't.
Well, here's how I see it, and this is just sort of an off-the-cuff observation, but it seems to me that these ABAs wear two hats. First, they're a title licensee, and secondly, they're an ABA. And so to the extent that they're functioning as a title licensee, they're still subject to the same rules that any other title licensee is subject to. But the portion of their operations that involves the ABA functioning, those will be subject to the Division of Real Estate. That may be clear as mud to you, but that's kind of how I see it. There are really two sets of regulations that govern an ABA. There's all the title stuff that applies to any other title licensee, and then if you're going to be this unique kind of title licensee, the ABA, then you're going to be regulated as to those ABA functions by the Division of Real Estate.
But like an ABA sharing an office with another title company, which is, that is ABA, I do know the department does come in and let them know they can't do that. So, okay.
Right, because that's a rule that applies to every title agency.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Reed.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Reed. Thank you for your question, Nancy. We did get a little bit of feedback chatter there from someone else on the line while Reed was talking. So just a reminder to those joining us, if you've got background noise happening in your offices where we're all calling in, or in your homes or wherever you're calling from, if you wouldn't mind, if you're not the one talking, please put yourself on mute temporarily until you need to make a comment. With that, if there are no other questions or comments, then we appreciate Reed and the department looking into that issue for us. I think at this point I would say it's probably safe to go ahead and remove that from the next agenda. I don't know if that needs to stay on any longer. And we'll leave the time with Reed to talk with us about the differences in deposits and requirements. The differences in deposit requirements, excuse me.
Thank you, Chase. Everybody should have received a handout that I put together that has a chart at the top that compares the requirements of the deposit requirements under two statutes, 23A406, which applies to title licensees, and then 23A409 that applies to any other licensee. The purpose of my wanting to discuss this is that this comparison you'll see generates some oddities that I think we ought to try to fix. So let me run through the chart if you would. The first category under requirement is, okay, well, what has to be deposited under these two statutes? Well, under the 406 that applies to title licensees, it's fairly broad, any money in connection with escrow. On the other hand, under 409, which applies to any licensee, it just applies to money that the licensee gets to forward to an insurer or an insured. Now, in an escrow situation, it seems to me the only money that held be forwarded to an insurer or an insured is the title insurance premium. If that could come through, comes into the, is deposited in escrow. So you have a very broad scope under 406 and a fairly narrow scope, just money that's going to insurers or insureds under 409. And then the next requirement will, so okay, this money that gets deposited, where is it deposited? There are some similarities between the two. 406 says a financial institution. 409 says a depository institution, which I think is pretty close to the same thing. But 409 adds a requirement that institution has to have an office in this state. And some of you may be aware that the department has taken the position that title licensees, when they're depositing money in a federal institution, the institution has to have an office in the state. The third requirement that I wanted to look at, what kind of account, and in both 406 and 409, they're essentially the same. They have to be federally insured, and they have to be a trust account. And then the last requirement, or last point I wanted to compare these two statutes on is, are there alternatives? There's something different that someone can do to comply with the statute. Under 406, the answer is no, there isn't an alternative. But under 409, it says that the commissioner can approve an account that provides safety and safety that's comparable to federally insured trust accounts. Now, the interesting part about that is that there's no mention of an office requirement there. So in theory, if someone wanted to comply with 409 and not deposit in an institution with an office in this state, all they'd have to do is ask the commissioner to approve depositing in a federal insured trust account. And this is like a giant loophole in my mind to get around this office in the state requirement. So I'm going to, so the department's looking at doing a couple of things. First, we want to make it the two statutes consistent, and so we want to put an office requirement in the title licensee statute. So it would require the money deposited in a financial institution that has an office in Utah.
Reed, can I interrupt you? So I think here, just, and this is only because I also represent the Department of Financial Institutions, I think it would be better to change that term to depository institution, because a financial institution is essentially any institution regulated by the Department of Financial Institutions. That could be a title lender, money transmitter. So I think depository is more what the intent of, I think, these statutes are.
Thank you. Thank you for that advice. That's a good idea. And then the other thing that I would I think that would be wise to do is eliminate this alternative requirement, or this alternative under 409, because it's essentially a loophole to get around this office in the state requirement. So the actual text of these statutes, I've put in this handout below the chart for you to check my work and make sure I'm representing them truly. I'm presenting this information to you to see if there are any suggestions or concerns about this from the commission or anybody else who happens to be listening in.
So just so that I'm clear, this is Allison, the most important reason that we're doing this is just to kind of shore up that they'll actually have a bank account here in Utah. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's really the bottom line. You're right. That's a good way to put it.
Okay. I don't see. I mean, I think it looks good.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nancy.
I just want to clarify, and you are interested in removing the last sentence of 31A23A409, where it says in some other account approved by the commissioner. I agree with the idea that there's times when we can look through our rules and regs and they do seem like they can go in a circle. Do we know at all when that was added, or is it always been there?
That is a great question, and I don't know the answer to that, Nancy. To my knowledge, we've never used this before.
Okay. I just wondered if there was some reason it was added. Maybe it was part of the original language, but I just wondered if it was something that was added. I don't see any reason that we couldn't remove that, and heaven knows we'd love to get rid of loopholes, but I'll put it out there for anybody else.
Thank you, Nancy.
Well, Nancy, you just went with where my mind was going with that. Some of what I find difficult in my position is whether or not I happen to have been around or involved in, you know, previous changes or conversations with any of these rules or code. I'm not sure why that language is there as it is now, but clearly, Reed, what you're pointing out brings in line both rules from what I understand to be the intent of the intent of those rules to keep the agencies doing business in Utah, you know, working in Utah, keeping that money here in Utah to keep keep everything, I suppose, local and clear cut under Utah laws and rules. So to me, it makes perfect sense. It seems like it goes hand in hand with what the intent is. I don't know that I have any other concern, with the exception to what Nancy pointed out. If there is a specific reason why it reads that way, and that was, you know, added recently or you know, within the last several years, no. I think maybe more review would be necessary. But I think I appreciate your efforts to spot a loophole. It sure seems like it is one. It looks like an oversight to me.
This is Randy Overstreet. Can I comment a little bit?
Please.
I don't know exactly what year it was in place either. When I used to do market conduct exams a couple years ago, like over 15 years ago, I used to work with that fiduciary rule, and that was in place back at that time. So, I mean, it's a long, many, many years ago.
Okay.
And I had one other question. I don't know if it was addressed and I tuned out for a second or something, but I noticed in that 409, it also, this is a requirement where it says it has an office in the state if the licensee depositing the money is a resident licensee. So what about non-resident title agents? Is this intended, this requirement just for resident licensees, or what about those that are not resident?
Well, I would say the plain language says what it says, and that's what the legislative policy is.
Okay. I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you.
Randy Smart. Just got one question. And since 409, it applies to any licensee, right? Not just title agents. Is it possible that that because it involves other licensees, there was a reason for that put in for those other types of licensees with other types of insurance.
Oh, yes, it is possible, and maybe to ease everyone's concerns, maybe instead of eliminating this loophole, what we simply say is it has to be a depository institution with an office in the state, and require that, and then there won't be such a loophole. Or it has to provide safety, the equivalent of a federally insured trust account, and it has to be an account that's in an institution with an office in the state. That way we don't get rid of it, but we at least put the requirement an office in the state into the exception, because it's not there right now.
More or less, just using the same wording to bring uniformity under both situations, or both types of deposits.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So it has to be a depository, federally insured trust account in a depository institution, and depository institution has to have an office in Utah, and that applies to title licensees, it applies generally, and it also applies anytime the commissioner approves some kind of exception.
That would make sense to me. My current understanding, to go back to Brandy's comment about the resident licensee, my current understanding is the only non-resident licensee licenses that are issued are to individual title examiners. I suppose I haven't looked at that, and I'm just forgetting. Are we aware of aren't any non-resident agency license issued, right? And are there any non-resident escrow licenses? I don't recall whether that's happened yet or not.
I don't believe, this is Randy Overstreet, I don't believe so as far as agencies, but with individuals, there aren't very many, but there are occasionally individual licensees that are non-residents.
And are they on the escrow side or the title search and examination side?
It could be on any side. I mean, at one time several years ago, we were looking at not allowing non-residents to have a license, but we were told by legislative research that that would not be constitutional, so we had to allow them to have it. But I don't know off the top of my head as to which lines of authority, but it is available for others that are not. But there are. Restrictions, you know, like I think having to use they would still have to have an office that they're working through and stuff like that. But
the agency, even
if there isn't one now, there could be one a month from now. I mean, it's not closed off to any particular line of authority to have a non-resident.
Yeah. Okay.
Hello, this is Carol. I'm still a little confused. I had a closing the other day, and the title company was in Utah, but the money went outside of Utah. You're saying that is okay as long as it's a federal banking institution?
No, we're saying that it's not okay unless the institution has an office in Utah.
Well, they do, but the money,
well,
when we had to wire to them, the money went outside of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, Carol, did it go to an office? Like, I do know there's some national agencies who have centralized you know, comptrollers or centralized funding departments where all of the funding is done by the home office. So say they're located in Florida. That Florida office, they're using Utah banks. You know, in the instances that they've been brought to my attention, they use a Utah bank, so it's a Utah account with a Utah branch, funded by an assistant or someone from a home office. I'm curious, in your example, do you know on the wire instructions where it said, you know, that you list the bank account and the address of the bank, was that a Utah bank, or was it, you know, was that bank, the address for that bank in the same state that you were sending the money to?
That's what I recall. I'm not in my office today, but that's what I recall. Okay. In fact, when my assistant and I looked at it, I thought, where's this? Where's this going? I mean, I'd never worked with this title company before, and so that brought, you know, some questions in my mind. And now listening to this conversation, I'm like, was that money supposed to have left the state? You know, so that's making me a little concerned.
Yeah, it may be something worth looking into, and should you find that the address for the bank was not in Utah, perhaps that's something to consider, you know, whether it should be reported for review or not with the department. But the intent here, I think Reed makes a great point to say, we've got some deposits that are absolutely supposed to stay in Utah, and then we have some deposits that potentially could be taken outside of Utah when the pure intent of the, you know, the code and the industry is that should be located, you know, those monies should be held in Utah when it's on Utah transactions. And so this should help to close that loophole and stop that very scenario that you're questioning. It should stop that from happening.
Okay, I'm gonna pull that file and look at those wire instructions, because this is why I'm a little confused, because what I recall, there was nothing in that wire instructions that referenced a Utah location. So
then that, you know, that may be something where that agent may not be aware of these requirements, and they may need the opportunity to talk with the Department of Insurance so they can come into compliance.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to do a little homework on that. Okay. I'll get back with you then. Thank you.
That's a great question, a great comment to highlight exactly why I appreciate, Reed, you looking at this and bringing it to our attention. I think it's important. I think it's important to have it clear, and I think it's important to have it uniform. So I guess my question is for you then, what is it you need from the commission? Just our review, do we need to take any kind of a motion at this point to allow you to do this, or to bring back? Tell me what it is you need from us.
What I hope to get is your input and to hear that there weren't any objections to moving forward in this direction, and so I got what I wanted, and that's great.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. I certainly agree, and I will be glad to see this. See this small change made to help bring more clarity to how the deposits are supposed to be kept here.
Good.
Any other comments from the commission? Any other questions?
Again, my only question or concern is under 409, when it's involving all licensees, not just a specific group. And I just don't know enough about the other licensees, whether or not they would need it at times to get approval by the commissioner to have some other type of federally insured account, Reed. So that
That's the only question I have.
And Randy, I think what the direction will go is to keep that exception in place.
Okay.
Simply say that exception has to involve an office in this state.
Yeah, okay.
And for purposes of the record, that was Randy Overstreet, correct, that made that comment?
No, Randy Smart.
That was Randy Smart.
Sorry, okay. I'm glad I asked because I'm sorry, getting the voices mixed up. Thank you, Randy. Okay. If there's nothing further with that, then we will. I believe at this point there is no other items or agendas, or no other items on the agenda. Is there anything that needs to be brought to the attention of the commission as a hot topic that needs to be that anyone would like to discuss today, or would like to be asked to be put on the next agenda?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't have anything.
Well, if not, our next meeting is scheduled for December 14th. I think we're all used to this format, and I think with given the current conditions in Utah with the increase in cases and the newly issued declaration for the state of emergency, I believe we all have to be expecting to meet this way again in December, likely for the next several months. So we'll be plan to meet by phone unless you see otherwise on the next agenda that's sent out by Steve, but December 14th. With that, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Seconded?
I'll second it.
Motion to adjourn by Randy, seconded by Allison. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes and we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.